place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. This is Sally Bethes. Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of American Freedom Watch Radio. Now, the call-in number is 347-857-4364. That's 347-857-4364, and make sure you press 1 if you would like to speak on the air. If you don't press 1, we just let you listen out there and we don't bother you. You can also go into the chat room and submit questions and comments there. Yesterday they were having problems with the chat room, but it looks like it's okay today. So, with all that being said, I have there's so many things I want to rant about, but I'm going to limit it to just a couple of things. I could rant for 2 hours by myself tonight with everything that's been going on. But when you think of everything that's been happening in Nevada, and then this other thing I just saw about Social Security, I'm like, you know, the illegals have all the rights in this country. If you're a legal American, you're the one who's going to get stuck, and the illegals get everybody jumping all over and stupid things like John Ellis Bush saying, they're not felons. This is all an act of love. They trespassed and invaded our country because of an act of love and all this other craziness. This is the same guy that says we need more Spanish because they're more fertile and, you know, we need workers. I mean, it's so disgusting. And the parent, you know, the child shouldn't pay for the acts of the parents, except when you're an American. I don't know how many of you have heard about this, but I just heard this yesterday, and I've got some info. Won't spend a lot of time, but Social Security Treasury targets taxpayers for their parents' decade-old debts. They are going back to things where Social Security overpaid a parent. It could be 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It doesn't matter. And now they're going after the siblings, the children, for the money. And they got this crazy, there's a suit going out there now. So if you're a legal American, you are responsible for the acts of your parents, especially when it wasn't even their fault. Social Security overpaid them. So now you're the one who's going to have to pay for years and years of whatever they think they overpaid. Absolutely outrageous. But at the same time, you know, the illegals, it's not their fault that they're here. It was their parents' fault. Let's give them free tuition here or in-state tuition, as they're trying to do here in Florida. Let's give them all the breaks. The illegals get all the breaks, but let's screw over the Americans every chance we can. And then, of course, we have the situation in Nevada where, you know, we're going to go after the American ranchers and the American cattle. We're going to take all but an army out there to go after them, but we would never go and put an army down on the border to secure our homeland. We can't go after the illegals. We have to go after the Americans. Now, you guys, am I exaggerating, or is this not what's happening in this country today? The whole, it's just totally nuts. What are you guys thinking in this, Karen and Neil?
Well, I happen to agree with you, and hi there, everyone. You're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio American Statesman on Tuesday evening from 8 to 10, and on Red State Talk Radio on Wednesday at 12 in the afternoon, and on Sunday at 12 in the evening. Please share our shows. Podcasts can be found on Blog Talk Radio American Statesman. Visit our website, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, saveamericafoundation.com, karenshone.com, and votekarenshone.com. Welcome all to this lovely Tuesday evening and the rant of Sally Bethes. And you are absolutely right, Sally. Screaming, ranting is nothing. Screaming is what we should be doing. I just told my accountant I want to change my deductions for 20 million illegals on my income tax. Maybe I'll get money back like they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Today is tax day, everybody. Just think, every dollar you're spending is going into the pocket of some illegal because it's an act of love. So when you're sitting down at your dinner table, recognizing the little tiny packages of food that used to be a pound and is now 12 ounces, that's the new measurement code, used to be a cup and is now 5 ounces, that's the new measurement code, that all of those other ounces are going to feed some illegal because it's an act of love.
God.
It's so disgusting.
Every time I want to say that, I want to scream.
Well, you think of John Ellis Bush saying this at the same time he's talking about, well, the Hispanics are so, they care about their families, and they're so much fertile, and we need workers. And I'm like, is anybody listening to anything?
Yeah, and while you're doing that, remember, let's pay for their abortions.
Exactly. Let's do that, too. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, today was a very interesting day on the Nevada front, and there is Dirty Harry with his hand up in the air. I'm going to get that rancher. Ooh, it's not over. He should be prosecuted for disobeying the law. Well, what if the law is illegal and unconstitutional? And this man has been fighting this in the courts forever. For the last 20 years, I won't say forever, for the last 20 years, he's been fighting this in court until he has finally had enough. He does not recognize the Bureau of Land Management. I do not recognize the Bureau of Land Management. And Neil Rice, who is our researcher extraordinaire, has uncovered incredible information about the Bureau of Land Management. So, Neil, why don't you share with everything what this bureau really is, and how much land they actually own.
Well, actually, I don't have a total. I'm still working on that one. I am finding more, millions of acres. I just found another, as you were talking, another piece under an act that was called the 2000 Act, and it's going to take several days to actually accumulate as much as I want, or try to, but people, one thing right off the bat to start with, this Bureau of Land Management is an agency that was created, another agency that answers to no one. They have, in my opinion, absolutely no authority to do anything they are doing under the Constitution. Now, a lot of this land, if it was sold or given or whatever from the states, let's say, to the federal government, by whose authority? What authority did legislators, even congressmen? Congressmen have no authority outside of the District of Columbia to do any type of action like this. And if people knew their Constitution, they'd understand that their representatives are bigger criminals than Al Capone ever thought of being.
Well, let's make a reference to that, Neil. Article 4, Section 4 of our Constitution guarantees, it doesn't say maybe, it doesn't say should, it doesn't say could have, it says guarantees every state. And at that time, the state was referred to as the people. So it guarantees we, the people, a Republican form of government. And that's not the Republican Party, folks. When our founders talked about the Republican form of government, they were talking about a government that was representative. That meant that you elect the officials. The officials have to do your bidding. And once they do your bidding or do not, then you have recourse. And recourse comes, as we learned, in several ways. And one of the recourse is a common law grand jury. Another recourse is the ballot box. But our Constitution never said unelected officials can make laws. What the Supreme Court did say is that if there was any law that was created that was repugnant, that means unconstitutional, repugnant to the Constitution, it is void because it can't be enforced. So this gentleman, Clive and Bundy, said, I do not recognize this bureaucratic agency because they are repugnant to the Constitution. They should have no authority, and all they are doing is theft of private property. And he made a stand. I am so glad that he did that, because that enables everyone to talk about what's going on and to learn about the Constitution and how it works. And we are in Florida, and people in Florida think, oh, that's Nevada. It's not going to happen. We're not going to have anything like that come to Florida. We don't have any agencies like that that would want to steal our land. Well, wake up, Florida, because this is going on in every state. This is not just in Nevada. What's going on in Florida? Well, we've got lots of goodies on those Florida conservation agencies who fall under the same category as the Bureau of Land Management, don't they, Neil?
Oh, yeah. Well, land management works in Florida with the DEP, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. But stop and think. Everybody needs to stop and think. It's not just the land Bureau of Land Management. Think of all the agencies that this federal government has created, or your state governments, they're even worse, that have created, and the councils and the committees. You, the taxpayer, are supplying them a building of some sort. You're paying their electric bill. Every piece of material they use every day in order to work, you're paying their salaries, their benefits, you're paying their bonuses, their travel, their conferences they go to, everything. Can you imagine the trillions of dollars that have been spent on agencies with this federal government that works against you? You, your county where you live, your state where you live, and to destroy America.
That is their MO. That is their modus operandi. That is what they want to do. They are on a crash course to destroy America. And the best way, the fastest way, the easiest way to do it is theft of private property.
Mm-hmm.
And just as Neil said, we, the people, are paying for our own destruction. There's no other nice way to say that. We are paying for our own destruction. We are allowing these unconstitutional usurpers to beat their chests and say, look at me, I got the power. I got the power. Well, guess what? They do not have any power if we stand up to them. And Cliven Bundy is a perfect example of what one man, what one family can do when he says, I have had enough. And I believe personally, oh, I know everyone on our show, Sally, Neil, myself, and all of our guests, they've had enough too. The question is, what will the American people do? And the sad part is, I think as Cliven Bundy was on yesterday when he was on the Blaze, he made a really incredible statement. And he said, because Americans have been so dumbed down, they don't know their Constitution. And that's really the sad part of this whole process, of this whole problem of Cliven Bundy. Because absolutely, if Americans knew their Constitution, they would never have accepted the unconstitutional Bureau of Land Management. Who's connected to them, Neil? I know you did some work on that one.
Yeah, I have a real problem with that as far as the state of Florida and many other states, I'm positive. Instead of some of this garbage that they're teaching kids in school that they are absolutely going to get no benefits out of, as they progress through their lives, it's going to be meaningless education that they're giving them. They need to be teaching the Constitution and the true history of America. People don't realize the Constitution, when you say it, what it amounts to, the Constitution is telling you what your rights are. And once you understand what your rights are, when you see these things that are happening, automatically a light's going to go off and you're going to be going, whoa, wait a minute. But until you understand what your rights are without having a corrupt government telling you what your rights are, you're never going to get anywhere. You're going to go further back and further back. And it's very unfortunate because just like Bundy now, they are trying to destroy a lot of the documents. And we found that and we got that information. It's been saved. But they are taking this stuff. Harry Reid is getting this stuff off as fast as he can. But it's a little too late. Now, this is what they do with everything.
We made an amazing discovery with Harry Reid and his family. And, Neil, same thing. You experienced the same thing I did. You ran for office. I'm running for office. It blows my mind to think that people running for office have to go out and collect hundreds of thousands of dollars for a position that in Florida the representative makes $30,000. Could you explain to me why I need to build a war chest that's over $100,000 to win an election when the salary is only $30,000?
It makes no sense.
That is a huge question. You were running for county commissioner. You experienced the same thing.
Yeah, I ran for county commissioner. I've never run for anything in my life, except maybe after my dog got loose. And I didn't have the money. I invested less than $30 in my campaign. With my name being Neil, most of the people, when they saw it or heard it, they thought it was a guy. And I ended up with one-third of the vote. I never had a sign out, nothing. But I talked to people. Now I'm going to run again, but now I've got people that want to get behind me.
And, folks, that is what we need to do. It's not just the standoff, because Bundy did a phenomenal job of bringing this to the forefront, but you can't just fight from the outside. We can't return the same criminals back to office and expect they're going to all of a sudden have a morality moment and say, gee, I don't think I should vote for that bill because it's really going to hurt the people. They're not going to do that, folks. They've got every single special interest group beating on their door. And in Florida, the corruption is so incredible. It's not even hard to believe anymore because you can see it. It's so blatant. The parading around of the special interest groups is insurmountable, especially when it comes to something that would help the people. We are now suffering from the bill last year. Sally, Neil, myself went to Tallahassee. We begged them, do not pass this bill. I think it was 507. And it was it addressed public-private partnerships and the creation of these free trade zones. Well, folks, let's take a look at what a free trade zone really means. If you own a business and you decide that you will locate your new business in a free trade zone, you will get favorable tax status, you'll get rebates, you'll get subsidies, whatever your deal happens to be for the free trade zone that you are in. Also, if you're a foreign entity and you bring your foreign corporation here and then you bring your workers here, nobody's going to tell you, you have to pay them $10 an hour. That's the law. You have to pay them minimum wage. That's the law. That's not the law. And that's not the law if you're located in a free trade zone, because you get to have autonomy of your country. They built the bridge in San Francisco. We gave the Chinese billions of dollars to build the bridge, the Oakland-San Francisco bridge, after the earthquake. Their workers got $12 a week. $12 a week. Now, yes, they were provided living quarters. Yes, they were provided food. But what kind of living quarters were they provided? Their little cubicles, which is where they were forced to live. $12 a week, folks, is slave labor. And that's what is going to go on in these free trade zones. But worse than that,
what happens to all of the good citizens that have a business, that are doing their best to pay their bills, to pay their taxes, to keep their employees employed, to do everything that they can for their family, for their community? Where's the help for them? Why aren't they allowed the same privileges as some foreign billionaire corporation, having these privileges just because they stepped their foot in a free trade zone? Well, that's one of the things that I am going to go after and expose. I think everybody that is in Florida should pay the same tax rate. If they want to make it lower for everybody. Our Constitution says we the people. It doesn't say we some of the people. It doesn't say we the people in the free trade zone. It doesn't say we the people of a foreign corporation. It says we the people. There shall be no classes. We are all equal. Well, seems as though our governor and our legislators seem to forget that, as they do in all states, because they are creating these free economic trade zones, thinking that that is going to bring a boom to the economy. The only economy that it's going to boom are the corporations that are in these free trade zones, so they can continue to make donations to the campaigns of the people that are making $30,000 a year.
Exactly right.
It is incredible, the criminality of the people in Tallahassee. And
they're appalling. There's no question about it.
I just got an email from a gentleman who also is running for office, and he uncovered on the Florida brewery. And it seems as though they are trying to pass a law that will eliminate, basically, the small brewers. What a surprise. Mm-hmm. The people don't realize that crops have to be rotated. And as a result of them being rotated, because certain nutrients come out of the soil, a farmer will plant multiple crops at different times. And one of those crops that they can build, we have discovered, are perfect for brewing beer, all kinds of different kinds of beer, all kinds of fun kinds of beer. And we have some really great breweries in northern Florida. Well, it appears as though our legislators who are being paid off, and I believe, although don't quote me on this one, I believe it's Don Gates. I'm not sure. That one I will check on. He is getting paid off by the large distributor who just happens to be Budweiser. And Budweiser does not like the idea that small breweries might compete. So what are they doing? They're drafting a bill that says that if you are a beer distributor, you have to send your beer just to a, if you are a brewery, you have to send bottle and send your beer to a distributor before it can go to a restaurant or a bar or anything. Another layer, which will, of course, make your beer not competitive. It is a good old boys network, and nothing is more sure than this. This is exactly the way this works. No wonder why the Republicans hate the conservatives, because we keep on uncovering all of the criminality from the rhinos, from the, quote, moderates, if you could even call them that, or the progressive Republicans. The progressive Republicans is a perfect example of crony, and that's the kind of capitalism that doesn't work. So when the Democrats say, oh, we tried capitalism and it doesn't work, they're 100% right, because they're talking about crony capitalism. And guess what? Crony capitalism doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's not going to happen. It doesn't work. So this is a very, very perfect example of politics of beer.
and how it is anti-business, anti-growth, anti-everything just to promote Budweiser. And then we should go and see who does Budweiser donate to. And we can go and find that on the website that will have all of that information. And I'll find the name of that website in a minute. But there is a website, and it shows all of the donors to all of the legislators. So if you want to know why a particular bill is being passed, just go and look to see who your legislator gets their donations from, and you will be in for a big surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me break in here for a minute because I do want to say something, and I have felt this way now for some time. Since last year, when Tallahassee legislators in Florida would not pass a property protection act for the people here in Florida.
Oh, yes.
It seems like, in my opinion, Tallahassee, Florida, should just shut down all their sessions. We don't need them. We absolutely do not need them, because the only thing they pass, folks, are the bills for the corporations and the lobbyists. I can honestly not remember when they have passed a great bill for the people in Florida. I cannot.
Maybe because
they just
they
need
haven't.
To shut down and go home.
Yes, you are absolutely right. By the way, the name of that website is called followthemoney.org. Followthemoney, one word, .org. Go and check out on that website who your legislator gets their information and their money from, and you will be in for a big treat, a big surprise. One of the people we found out was Harry Reid and his family. They have picked out the Bundy Ranch to have their new solar farm. And guess who they have partnered with in order to create
China.
Their solar farm? Oh,
Neil,
you got it right.
Yeah, our good old buds over there in communist China.
yes. Oh, gosh. Well, this is how little the legislators think of America and Americans. They do not care. You know what I love to do when I go around and I'm campaigning? And the people say, I just love Obama. He just loves me. And I ask them if he knows them. And, of course, they say, no. Well, how can somebody love you if they never met you? How can somebody love you if they never spent any time with you? Makes them pause and think. And it makes them do a little head spin there. Because this is really egregious. Now, the corporation of the Bureau of Land Management, I believe, has a sticky, nasty roots, and I believe they are tied. If we go back and we look at what their intent is, well, their intent is to own a lot of land, and anybody that wants to own that much land, I kind of have to go back to the biodiversity map that states from the United Nations that their goal is to make sure that a minimum of 50% of America is off limits to humans. Do you think they might be driving that train?
Mm-hmm.
Think they might be trying to do that one? Think they might be pushing that bill? I think so. Between what Obama is trying to do with his stupid war on cow farts or cow belching or whatever this is, and the absolute lie and deceit and destruction that the EPA is causing to our farmers, our fishermen, our country, just because there has to be a motivation behind it. And I would believe that that motivation has got to be tied to Agenda 21. I can't think of anything else. The earmarks are there. It just sounds that way. It just makes me feel that way. It has that flavor.
Oh, yeah.
I just get that flavor. So, I am, I don't know, maybe the new industry is going to be diapers for cows.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we'll make them breathe in a special a container that pushes the CO2 in the ground.
No, but
well,
very seriously, people need to start calling their congressmen. And please, when you call your congressmen and your senators, the first phone call you want to make above them is to the party, whether it's Democrat, Republican, call the party first. They are the ones that control your representatives. Your representatives are not allowed to look out for you. Both parties make sure of that. They tell your elected official how, when, and where he will vote, sleep, eat, whatever it amounts to. Call them and tell all of them to stop funding these unconstitutional agencies, that we the people are sick of it, we've had enough, and if they want a war, we're ready.
Well,
and on that note, this just so I can tell the people in Florida so they know, I double-checked because I've been listening to that brewery bill. It's House Bill 1329, if they want to go look it up, 1329, and tell them to stop playing games with that. And one other thing in reference to China, I heard late this afternoon, that there's a Chinese people who are going on strike in one of the shoe factories. It's the shoe factory that makes for Nike and some of the big brands, whoever they are. But anyway, so the price of price of sneakers here will probably go up. But I do think it's interesting that the Chinese worker is going on strike.
I think that's amazing. God bless the Chinese worker. It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? That is really a terrific thing.
I wonder how many of them will get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Well, I also want to know how much. I don't buy Nike tennis shoes or sneakers and stuff, so it doesn't make much difference to me. The brands they make, I don't buy, but you can be sure those are going to go up.
Oh yes.
Well, who knows? Maybe they'll actually start making them here in America.
Wouldn't that be more
concept?
Wouldn't that be a novel thing? But, you know, I really believe that all of these land grabs, folks, they don't have anything to do with the land. Yeah, I mean, they want the land, but they don't have anything to do with conservation. I believe that if we went back and we analyzed all of these land grabs, they are probably sitting on some type of natural resources, whether it be oil or gas or coal or minerals or whatever. I believe that we're sitting on top of something. And then as a result of that, they are using the conservation MO to wave their flag like the tortoise, which we also discovered that Bureau of Land Management went around and shot all of these tortoises that they are supposed to be saving. So that's kind
of...
They
euthanized them.
Yeah, they euthanized the tortoises, and that kind of reminds me of PETA, who doesn't use any of the money that anybody gives them to protect the animals. They kill the animals and go out and do lobbying. That's what they use the money for. So it sounds very, very, very similar, wouldn't you say? It sounds exactly like the same thing. I bet if you went by the Bundy's Ranch and that area in Nevada, I bet if they did a little digging, they'd find something. I'm sure there'd be something there that somebody wants to put their little grubby hands on. And as we have learned from working with this group, they have no problem with keeping it off limits for 20 or 30 years And then all of a sudden, when all of those people that were the fighters for conservation have passed, then all of a sudden they'll say, oh, you know, we have enough turtles, we have enough sparrows, we have enough fish, we have enough that, and we can use the land now. And, oh, by the way, we really made a mistake, and fossil fuel is not bad, and coal is not bad, and maybe we should bring that back. But then again, who's in control of the land? That's what this is all about. That is what this is all about. This has nothing to do with conservation. This has to do with theft of natural resources and private property.
Well, and on that note, we have a guest.
Well, folks, okay. We have a very special guest this evening. And this fits right in with what we were talking about because, oh, we've been exposing lie upon lie upon lie. And I don't know, John Casey is with us this evening. We are so excited because he's going to tell us the truth about the weather. Won't that be novel? Welcome, John. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me, Karen. Always a pleasure.
Hi, John.
Well, John, it's cold in Florida in April. Can you please tell me why that's happening?
Well, I guess Al Gore may have gotten it wrong, if that's possible.
Do you think? Oh, my goodness. I thought maybe it was all those cows up in North Florida that were just farting and farting, and they were just destroying the atmosphere, and they were just making it cold.
It's probably coming from the cows or something related, I'm sure. I see Atlanta's about ready to tie or break a cold weather record. They should be having 32 degrees in the morning.
Yes, isn't that amazing? I'm sorry for all the people that live up north, but every time we hear about a snowstorm up there, we do a little ha-ha-ha, we told you. And unfortunately, that's the sad part, John. We did tell everybody, and you've been telling everybody since I've known you for about 5 or 6 years now. And that to me is the evil part. It's one thing if you honestly don't know, but taking reports and twisting them and manipulating them like the IPCC does, I think that's criminal. And people are going to die because of that, because we could be prepared. So let's talk about that for a minute, John, if you don't mind. Who is the IPCC, and where are they getting this misinformation from, or how are they creating it so that people actually believe what they're doing and saying?
The IPCC, or Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, was organized by the UN in 1988 as part of the United Nations Environmental Program. It was put together by a fellow by the name of Maurice Strong, who was a Canadian oil patch guy who got introduced to Kofi Annan at the UN and went on to do a lot of things, like help draft the Kyoto Protocol and otherwise get the UN and participating nations to believe in the myth of the greenhouse gas theory and that mankind's CO2 emissions from industrial and farm activity control the climate. So it was a myth back then. Was a myth when the greenhouse gas theory was introduced in 1896, and is still a myth today. However, politicians who want to play on the people's desire to care for the environment have taken advantage of that desire and twisted science on greenhouse gas theory into something it was never meant to be.
What is greenhouse gas? People look at me like I'm crazy what is greenhouse gas, and why should we know about it?
Greenhouse gases are those gases in the atmosphere that trap heat from the sun and reflected sun infrared energy from the Earth and in effect create somewhat of an insulating blanket. And the theory all along has been that if there were enough of these greenhouse gases that the, and especially CO2, that this blanket would do something similar to Venus and trap all heat or enough of it so that we would reach a point where all the glaciers would melt, the atmosphere would be record warm, record hot, and sea levels would rise, swamping all the major cities on the coastlines around the world. And, of course, it would bring drought and all kinds of other collateral ill effects. That's the theory, basically. But when you look at the greenhouse gas theory from taking it out of a flask in a laboratory and then applying it on a global scale, it just doesn't work. And it never really has. The greenhouse gas theory has always been a weak, ineffective theory. Greenhouse gases, most people think are CO2 and methane, but those are very small components. The largest component is water vapor. 95% of all greenhouse gases are water vapor. The remaining less than 5% is carbon dioxide and methane and smaller number of gases. But even of that 5%, mankind's contribution is smaller still, even 5% of that 5%. So mankind really has an insignificant role in climate change, and mankind's CO2 is an insignificant small fraction of the total greenhouse gases.
And that's the problem, folks, because the ocean is not going to pay taxes. And the ocean is where the majority of the water evaporates from. So they had to figure out a way to tax the people because they're evil and they want money. And this was their methodology of forcing people by lack of education into believing that they actually can do something about the climate other than hold an umbrella over your head when it's raining. There's very little. You know, John, I was watching the other day a show on channel or the History Channel, and they were talking about the devastation of the ancient volcanoes. Now, talk about CO2 going into the air, and one volcano does more damage, I would imagine, than mankind could do in a lifetime.
Certainly, if you look at the history of geophysical processes, earthquakes, and especially volcanoes, we find that surely volcanoes are far, far more powerful than the entire history of mankind's CO2 production. That's certainly the case. And one of the undiscussed aspects of that is the fact that volcanoes occur across the planet, not just on the Ring of Fire in the Pacific, but throughout the planet we have volcanoes. We even have them in Antarctica. And these volcanoes occur under the 71% of our planet that's covered by water. Yet we never hear or see anything about those except on the rarest of circumstances. And all these volcanoes are dumping vast quantities of sulfur dioxide and carbon dioxide either into the water or into the atmosphere. And when you look at the potential, it far exceeds the total of mankind's CO2 output, no question about it. And, for example, the last time we had a cold climate, or what we describe at the SSRC as a solar hibernation, that was during 1793 to 1830. Right in the dead center middle of that cold solar hibernation, we had the largest ever recorded volcanic eruption, Mount Tambora in Indonesia in 1815. It covered the earth with a veil of dust, blocked out the sun, which made that cold era even colder, resulted in here in the U.S. in 1816 being called the year without a summer, where, in fact, we had snow and ice in the middle of August, which wiped out crops throughout that year and adjoining years. There was significant crop damage.
This is what we could be facing now. Is that not correct?
That's correct. And all the research that we've done and other researchers in the field have done have shown a very strong correlation between these cold climate eras and the worst earthquakes and the worst volcanic eruptions. So we should, in fact, be prepared for major catastrophic global volcanic eruptions.
And I don't think a cow or a human not breathing or breathing is going to make a difference.
Absolutely not. We're talking about global scale effects and certainly nothing compared to the minuscule insignificant amount of CO2 that mankind produces. Bear in mind, again, the natural world has 20 times more CO2 that it produces than mankind.
John, we have a major problem going on right now because I'm looking at snow in April. You just said snow and ice in August. What is that going to do to the food supply?
If you look back in history, each time we've had these cold climate eras, these solar hibernations, they basically come from the sun cutting back on the amount of energy that it releases, which warms the earth. When we have these cold eras, history shows that we have substantial crop losses that affect everyone on the planet virtually. The last time, again, 1793 to 1830, was the last cold era, the last solar hibernation. Historian John D. Post looked at that era and in his studies determined that it was the worst subsistence crisis ever recorded. In other words, the cold was so bad, crop damage globally was so bad, that percentage-wise, more people than ever recorded froze to death and starved to death because of that cold era. And that's exactly what's coming around now. It has already started, and there's nothing we can do about it. And that's why, for example, we're seeing record cold temperatures in the South, much less the brutal winter we just had up north.
Do you think that this is something that could, we could have major crop damage this year if the winter extends itself up north?
I do believe that we're going to see crop damage across the board at all crop-growing latitudes and zones here in the U.S. For example, I just had a retired doctor who called me today from East Tennessee. He said it looks like he's going to lose 100% of his apple crop this year. And this
oh
is the third major loss since 2007. And by the way, 2007 was when I issued the first press release saying that this new cold era had begun and was going
right
to start devastating crops. So we're already seeing the effects, and it's just going to get worse as we reach the bottom years of this new cold era.
So right now we're at the big, well, we're seven years into this. And it's going to get worse before it gets better is what you're saying.
Absolutely. The 2020s and the early 2030s will probably be the worst years, but it doesn't take a lot to cause a substantial problem in the food distribution network, much less significantly increased prices. We're going to see that in the peach crops and the apple crops. Corn, wheat, and soybeans will continue to get more and more expensive, and so will meat that animals feed from, both pork and beef. Prices will continue to grow, as the feed for pigs and cattle continues to get more expensive.
Can I jump in and ask a question real quick here?
Absolutely.
With everything you're saying, and, of course, things we see happening in Nevada right now, obviously this weather will have an impact on cattle, but I'm also curious as to what impact it will have on Harry Reid's solar plant that he wants to have. What's going to happen to Nevada for his Chinese solar thing he's trying to do instead of the cattle?
Well, certainly Harry Reid, like the president and like other Democratic leaders in Washington, are completely ignoring the reality of what's happening with the climate and continue to reinforce the fraud of man-made climate change, this myth of the greenhouse gas theory. So, again, it was never about the science. It was never about the truth of the climate. It was always a political plan. And so they're going to press ahead with whatever they want to do, regardless of whether the cold or the new cold era arrives tomorrow or 5 years from tomorrow.
But, I mean, the options to have any kind of successful solar energy out of Nevada doesn't seem likely.
No.
Well, solar energy has become a problematic industry, just like the wind power industry. Both have been tried in Europe, and pretty much across the board, they're failing. The largest wind effort in the Baltic in the north of Denmark and Germany is a massive financial failure. The conversion from nuclear to wind and solar by the Germans has come at a very great penalty, as the cost of these systems, which don't perform, continues to go up, and that means the utility rates for the average German are continuing to skyrocket, which was the term Senator Obama used during his campaign, saying that utility rates would necessarily skyrocket. With regard to the solar industry here in the U.S., whether you're considering the corruption like Solyndra or the fact that these solar facilities don't perform, we've already got a very substantial history here in Florida. The largest solar power plant here in Florida has for 3 years been unsuccessful at meeting its minimum power output because solar is unreliable, just like weather is unreliable. So, again, I think everyone that looks at it knows that these systems either are too expensive or B, unreliable, or C, can never replace the low-cost energy of gas, coal, or even nuclear power.
So regardless of what you say, hold that thought for 1 minute because we will be right back. We just have to take a break. And you are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. This is your host, Karen Schoen. We are here today with Sally Baptiste, Neil Rice, and our fabulous scientist, John Casey. We are discussing the truth about the weather and what we will be facing should we pay attention. We must pay attention. This is not a matter, a laughing matter, even though we do laugh about it sometimes. It's not a laughing matter. This is American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, on Tuesday from 8 to 10, and on Red State Talk Radio on Wednesday at 12 noon and on Sunday at 12 in the evening. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, panhandlepatriots.com, SaveAmericaFoundation.com, AmericaIsMyName.org, KarenSchoen.com, VoteKarenSchoen.com, and please visit John Casey's website, SpaceAndScience.net. Folks, this is very, very serious, very serious. Looking back in history, after one of these volcanoes erupted, food was only a portion of the issue, because don't they also affect us with EMPs, that could be an issue as well, couldn't that, John?
Well, if you look at solar activity, the EMP issue is essentially one of large flares or coronal mass ejections coming from the sun. Those can happen any time. So it's difficult to plan on those. But certainly we do know with great certainty that we will be facing our largest earthquakes and largest volcanic eruptions. That process and that cycle has already begun. The March 11, 2011 Japanese 9.0 earthquake is right at the beginning of this cycle. We're seeing increased volcanic activity worldwide. We normally see about 50 active volcanoes, and thus far in the first quarter, we've got 83 active volcanoes worldwide. And these are the land-based, not the underwater ones. So we will continue to see those kinds of effects. Whether we have a big burst of energy from the sun, always difficult to predict. The last one, of course, was the 1859 Carrington event, right after we had started deploying a telegraph here in the U.S., and it, of course, it knocked out the telegraph. But we did quickly recover. So I think the best thing to do is plan on those things we know with certainty are coming, and the ones that are uncertain or unpredictable, do the best you can to plan for those. But in the meantime, we've already got a full plate of problems to deal with in terms of food shortages, cold weather, major earthquakes, and major volcanoes coming.
Well, that's unfortunately, I think that fits right into this administration's MO, because I believe that they are just looking for a way to restrict and control the people. And once we have a couple of catastrophic events, I can't see that they're going to be doing anything other than saying martial law or, you know, one of these other constricting things. But I believe that the cities will be the places where this will be hardest hit first off. And the rural areas hopefully will have food, but from what you're saying, rural upstate New York or rural Tennessee or rural anywhere above the Mason-Dixon line, they're not going to have enough opportunity to grow their crops.
If one, again, looks back at the last time we had one of these, what we're seeing now is almost a mirror image. For example, we're now seeing a freak cold weather event descend on the south. The doctor who called me telling me is by tomorrow morning his apple crop, his apple orchards will be wiped out. It's just one example of what we saw the last time these cold climates came through. You have not only a declining cold weather temperature curve globally that lasts for 20 or 30 years, but you also have these freak cold events to come through. Now, this particular cold event is doing a lot more damage than just in East Tennessee. We have had to look at a delayed spring planting up north to account for this difficult, long, cold winter, plus this freak cold event that just came through this week.
So we could be lulled into believing that spring is here and everything is the same, and then in the middle of a couple of weeks we could have a cold snap that could drive temperatures below freezing.
That's especially true if we have a large volcano or several large volcanoes going off, dumping a lot of reflective particulate and aerosols into the atmosphere, which could produce a 1, 2, or 3 year cool down, dramatic cool down, just like 1991 Mount Pinatubo did. It dropped global temperatures for 3 years straight. One volcano.
And remember Mount St. Helens when it went off? What was the next summer like right after that? That was a much cooler summer.
And compare Mount St. Helens with Mount Tambora of 1815. Mount St. Helens was Well, let's see. The one in between 1883 was Mount Krakatoa. Krakatoa was 10 times larger than Mount St. Helens, and Mount Tambora was 10 times larger than Krakatoa. So we're talking about the potential for a volcano 100 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens during this next cold era, if we see the same cycles repeat, and I think we will.
Now, why does it happen? Why do we get more volcanic action during the cold spell?
Because there's no money being put into global cooling research, only global warming, and again, to prop up the myth of global warming, not to prove it works, because it doesn't work. If there's anything we've proved in 20 years and billions of dollars, is that the greenhouse gas theory and mankind's CO2 have very little to do with global warming. It was always produced by the sun. But because we have no money for research in the field, we really don't understand the mechanism behind this correlation between the largest earthquakes, the largest volcanic eruptions, at the same time we're at the bottom of these cold temperature cycles, these solar hibernations. There are a couple theories. They deal with the mantle warming up during the 200 years prior and then very quickly cooling off or shutting down its movement. That tends to create stresses. And so that's why we see these events, or at least that's one theory. But we really don't know. It would be good if we had funds to go do some solid science research to find out why. But we do know that it does occur at the same time. That's the important thing.
This is the value of learning science in school. And the value of not learning science in school is the disinformation that people can actually have control over the climate. And that's why a science education is so important. John, I know you happen to take a look at the Common Core Science module. What did you think of it when you looked at it?
The Next Generation Science Standards, NGSS, that's coming out as the next component for Common Core, either this year or next year, is a tragic piece of educational dogma. It looks like it was written by Al Gore or someone at the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's all about mankind controlling the climate, which we now know from 20 years of experience is an absolute myth, and mankind's CO2 contributes an insignificant amount to climate change. So we're about to make it official and start teaching our young children that about something in science that simply is not true. This is tragic. I went in and looked at each grade level component for the climate science part of the Next Generation Science Standards, and it is very strongly mankind controls the climate. There's no mention of the sun controlling the climate, which, of course, is the primary controlling factor in climate change.
That's staggering. I'm a former teacher. I can't believe, well, yes, I can, because I know what the goal is. But to take a person's education and to waste it so that they can never be prepared for the future, they could never prepare properly, there's nothing other to call it other than evil. I can't think of another word, because you are deliberately taking a person, and instead of telling them the truth, which would enable them to prepare for their life going forward, you are deliberately feeding them disinformation, which puts their life in peril. And that is so repugnant. It's so disgusting. It is so evil. And we know it's being done on purpose, folks. We know that their goal is to depopulate the planet. What a better way than to say, oh, my goodness, it was a natural disaster and we just lost 100,000 people, which is exactly what happened with the tsunami in the Philippines. Do these volcanoes, you said volcanoes under the ocean, can they cause tsunamis?
Certainly can. There's no record that we can go back and trace because there's no physical evidence. So it's done by subjective study. If we have an earthquake on a major fault line, we can feel that in modern times. We feel it. We can see the effects. We can even see the tsunami develop. But in an underwater volcanic eruption, which can be quite powerful, we don't necessarily. For example, the second largest volcanic structure in the solar system is in the Pacific Ocean. Many who are aware of Olympus Mons on Mars as the largest volcano on the planet are not aware that this other structure even exists until recently. And one can imagine when and if that thing decides to erupt, it could create devastating results, certainly very large tsunamis. But that's speculative at the moment. All I'm saying is we really haven't studied much about what's going on under the water. And certainly we have not seen any research of any substantial amount that tells us how much CO2 is being put into the oceans by underwater volcanoes. And for those volcanoes that are on the surface that we can go study, very little money is being put into those at all if it tends to indicate that that volcanoes have a greater role in climate change than mankind.
Well, they wouldn't want anybody to know that one because then they could have to go and tax the volcano and they won't pay tax.
that's exactly how silly the president and the UN's position on climate change is. They must cause people to ignore reality. They must have people ignore science, real science, about what causes climate change for this phony fraud, the greatest fraud in the history of science, to be perpetrated.
The more that I am hearing about Common Core and what they are doing to the kids' minds and how they are destroying any chance for any kid to have any future of reality, it's like, where do the next scientists come from? Where do the next real scientists, who is going to help? Because science, to me, was when you understood and unraveled science and you could figure out what the pattern was and you look back in history and you saw a continuing pattern over and over and over again, well, it wasn't that you could predict the future, but you certainly would be able to get a good handle on what was going to be happening in the next 5 to 10 years, and you could prepare. And this is what is not happening now. There is no preparation. And, you know, the only people that are the, quote, preppers are viewed as the crazy people, and they're preparing for war, not preparing for a catastrophic climate event.
That's right. And if you watch the preppers on TV, you're absolutely right. They're preparing for all kinds of things, but not one of them that I've heard or seen is preparing for a new cold era and the ill effects. But history shows us this is one of the most important events in human history, these cold climate events. And yet there's no preparation. There's not one federal office and not $1 being funded to prepare this country for this new cold era. We will go into this era totally unprepared as a country. When our first major crop damage occurs, it can only cause panic because people will not know why it's happening or what to do about it. And, of course, they'll be unprepared when it happens.
Right. That is the key. And this is where we say, let's now talk about some things that people can do to prepare, because this is the end if you are not prepared. because once the food is gone, and it's not just food, we have a major disaster. It's not just going to be food. Think about the water. What will happen? Let's say there was a volcano or an earthquake. You could knock out a power grid, knock out a water source. The first thing I believe that would happen, as bad as it would be on food, is going to be disease.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Karen. If you go back again and study history, you'll learn a lot about how the future may unfold. If we look at what happened after Mount Tambora exploded in 1815, we see that hundreds of thousands of people died from cholera breaking out afterwards because water supplies got polluted. This is mostly an effect in South Asia, but it spread quickly to other countries.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that what happens in one country, just because it may be in the southern hemisphere, don't think that there is no effect that's going to be coming up north. First of all, the fault lines are extensive and travel extensively. And a volcano creating a tsunami could affect California. Just because it's in the South Pacific doesn't mean it couldn't come and affect the northern hemisphere as well. So as the southern hemisphere now goes into its cold winter, the effect on their crops are going to be insurmountable. So it's not just our northern farmers that are not going to be able to farm. We are getting a lot of our food from places like Brazil and Uruguay and Chile. What happens when these guys have no warm, when their winter is long and extensive as well? This is not just a small isolated incident that is only going to affect people in America. And once a country says, wait a minute, I don't have enough food to feed my people, I don't think I can export food, well, take a look around your grocery store and see how much food comes from America now. And America exports a lot of food. We do export a lot of food, but we also import a lot of food. And think about that, folks. Think about what's going to happen when those shelves, which only have, 3 days of food, I was talking to a grocer, and he said that they only stock enough for 3 days, 3 days worth of food. Think about 3 days worth of food in the city nearest you. What are people going to do? And you're right, John. People that are scared, people that are hungry, hunger creates horrible things. People do horrible things when they're hungry because the starvation process is long and drawn out for a long time. But I'm also very worried now about disease. And it only takes one to spread disease. We've seen that happen before. And we also know that they won't put up a border fence to protect us against the illegals. Who knows where these people are coming from and what disease they may be carrying as they are trying to escape what's happening in their country. So, John, what can people do?
Say again?
I said, what can people do, what can the average person do that can help them get through this? Because, let's face it, as bad as things are, there will be people that survive. There are always people that survive. And the people that survive are the people who are prepared and understand.
And the first step in preparation. Yeah, the first step is to pick up knowledge you need to be better prepared. So that's why at the Space and Science Research Corporation, we began publishing over a year ago the Global Climate Status Report. It comes out every quarter. The last one was issued on March the 10th. If you go to our website, www.spaceandscience.net, you can download the Global Climate Status Report, or you can send us an email and you can order a printed copy. But either way, that's a good place to start. It tells you not only what the status of the Earth's climate is, what the temperatures of the oceans and atmosphere are without government interference, and it also tells you that what we predict in terms of future climate. So all of that is there. That's step number one. Get the knowledge you need to understand what's really happening with the climate instead of what we're told on TV and the newspapers and by our government. Step number two, and what I recommend in all my presentations, is that everyone should have at least a one-year food supply on hand. As you mentioned, most stores only have a three-day food supply. When the first panic starts, and it may be the spring, it may be next fall or the following spring, the Russians, for example, say a new little ice age starts this year. Well, if that's the case, then we're going to start losing crops much sooner than even I predicted. However, once the panic starts, most grocery stores will be cleaned out overnight, either by looters or people going in and buying absolutely everything they can, whether they need it or not. So history shows that's what happens. That's what happened the last time, and it's what we should expect. That's why it's important to have a one-year food supply on hand. In addition, given the price increases we're seeing, it's financially a good decision to have a one-year food supply because you'll come out ahead rather than buying it a little each week, a little each month. You'll save 1 year's food cost increase across the board. Third thing is to pre-plan what might happen in your neighborhood, on your street, once the food shortages begin. Because history, again, has shown that when these cold events come around and food shortages begin, there is a lot of strife, both civil strife and on a larger scale. We see an increase in warfare worldwide with these cold eras. So all of this that I'm talking about is merely getting one prepared physically and, more importantly, mentally for what's coming. There's no one alive today who's been through this kind of a cold era, so it's going to be a big adjustment for everyone on the planet. So it's best to be prepared mentally and in other ways for this new cold era.
Well, stress creates horrible things. Preparation eliminate stress. And nobody is going to say that everybody is going to think of everything. You can't think of everything. We understand that. But, John, when you're talking about food, I would also say make sure that you have medicines that you need. Make sure that you have first aid kits. And would you recommend that people get the dehydrated food or what you're saying, food, what type of food, what do you mean?
Well, most people today can go to their local store and establish a one-year food supply. And most food that you can buy will last a few years, and you can, at the end of the year, recycle it or use it or whatever and always keep that one-year food supply just with local food purchases from your grocery store. However, for most people who are looking at very severe terms, for what may happen, for example, if the Russians are correct and we go into a little ice age, then that process won't be very effective. And that's when you need to look at freeze-dried food. I prefer that than dehydrated because it's easy to prepare. It still retains a lot of its nutrients, and it looks and smells much like it did when it was first prepared. So I'm a fan of freeze-dried food, which can last 25 years. So that's an excellent way of getting prepared.
Okay. And again, folks, doesn't matter what brand you buy, who you go talk to, it doesn't make any difference. Just do it. And start doing it now. Start doing this today. Don't be one of those people who belong to the woulda, shoulda, coulda club, because we have a bad tendency in America to do that. We are apathetic until it becomes too late, and then we panic, and then we riot, and this is the nature of people who are not prepared. It's human nature. They're going to do it. It doesn't make any difference. Just don't you be one of them. Be in the I am prepared column. And what are we going to do about fuel? That's a big issue also, especially as coal plants have been shutting down because of the stupidity of the energy policies of the criminals that are in our legislature and White House. So what do we suggest about doing warm? And also, I would suggest without electricity. You know, these cold storms can destroy electric grids. It doesn't have to be an EMP. You get a good ice storm and all of the lines will come down. And then people will be without electricity.
I can tell you, Karen, that I have contacted many of the major utility companies, and they're not doing one thing to prepare for the new cold era.
You know, you're right, because I sent an email over to one of the legislators who was in the Energy Committee, and this was in Florida. And I said, instead of pushing this energy bill, which is going to do absolutely nothing, and that was to subsidize buying energy-efficient appliances. Folks, that's a joke. Yes, you can have energy-efficient appliances, but you can also use your appliances efficiently. And to spend the extra money for the citizenry to subsidize these energy-efficient appliances, which, by the way, will connect to your smart meter, because that is the purpose of you forcing you into buying these pieces of equipment. But instead of doing that, I said, why don't you write a bill that says in Florida, you know, you were going to have a sit-down with all of the utility companies and come up with a plan of A, protection of the grid, and B, being able to supply more energy as a cold era extends. And the answer that I got back was, well, gee, Karen, if I did that, I would be changing the bill, and then it might not pass. So I wrote back and I said, I get it. So passing a bad bill is better than passing no bill at all. And I never got
sick,
an answer
it?
To that.
That's so sick. Well, I personally think, you know, we're talking about what's going to happen when there's no electricity. I think we all should be taking a lesson from the lady in Cape Coral where she was living off the grid. Might want to try that sometime and see what it's like and be prepared for it.
You know what I'm telling everybody? I'm telling everybody, if you cannot figure out what you need to sustain you for a year, then take a Friday night and go to your main switch and shut off your electricity. And then see what it's like to live in your house for the weekend without electricity. And you'll find out very quickly what are the things that you need to sustain yourself.
This is true.
I mean, you're not going to be able to go over to your electric stove and cook your dinner. You may have to eat right out of a can. You may have to just add water. You may have to, people with wells should also be aware that the well water, if you don't have electricity, the well water is a constant, I believe in Florida, it's like 58 degrees. So you can use the water and a styrofoam container to keep your food cold, should that be a need. There are a lot of different things that can be done to assist you, but not if you put your head in the sand and you pretend that it doesn't exist. That's the scary one. So, John, what could farmers do in the southern area that is now going to be what I'm hearing you say kind of off limits for all of those tropical plants? We're going to have a problem with the tropical plants. What should farmers be looking at then?
Well, they should be looking at, in all plant-growing zones in the U.S., having to deal with one or two less plant zone regions growing the same kinds of food. In other words, the cold is going to shift plant growing one or two zones further south during the cold era. So one needs to adjust to that. Number two, one needs to adjust to the fact that we're going to have longer, colder winters. That means a shorter growing cycle. So finding short cycle crops will be a big advantage for not only surviving, but thriving, doing well during the new cold era. Using crops that are cold tolerant or cold resistant. For example, a rice was developed recently in Brazil to weather the cold weather. It's not just the U.S. Every nation on the planet is going to have to deal with colder weather affecting various crops, whether it be a coffee crop or a corn or a wheat crop or a citrus crop. Here in Florida, for example, I've said the same thing for 7 years. We're going to lose most of our citrus crop here in Florida if this next solar hibernation, this next cold climate, repeats what it did the last time. All you have to do is study history to see how the plants will react, because we do have records going back that far as plant survivability.
I would also look at indoor growing. People that have patios, you could grow vegetables. You can grow lots of things. You can grow vertically. You can grow things that you could cover up, because that's what I'm hearing, John. If banana plants aren't going to make it.
right.
You know, the mangoes or the other warm weather crops are going to have a serious issue. Our tropical plants, you're right. But if you keep your plants smaller, maybe grow them in pots or something that you can maneuver, and if you have property, get shelters that you maybe could put the plants in so that they're not exposed. Because we don't think of that in Florida. We just think of it, nice and warm and it's wonderful. Well, that's going to change too. So I would assume then we're up in the panhandle, and I believe we are one number lower for growing than South Florida. So we should be looking at crops that grow probably in Virginia and Maryland, in that area, in that vicinity. Would that be a good idea?
That's a good comparison, and I believe you are correct. You're one growing zone different than South Florida.
Okay, so if I was going to do planting, I wouldn't be looking at the plants that are growing now. I would be looking at the plants. So if I want to grow apples, for example, I would want to look at the apples from the Maryland, Virginia area, rather than the ones that grow in the tropics in Florida.
Right.
So you could grow the same.
That's a good approach, yes.
You can grow the same overall. You could grow an apple, but you might not be able to grow a Fuji apple. You might have to grow a Granny Smith or a different type of apple that would be applicable to cold weather. Is that about right?
Good point. Anything that's cold tolerant would be the first choice.
Okay. So anybody that has any property at all should look at growing food for your family. Because, as you said, John, even if the cold doesn't wipe out the entire crop, and there are crops, the price of the food is going to escalate insurmountable. We're seeing that happen right now. We were just talking about that a few minutes ago when we started the show, that the package sizes are shrinking almost unrecognizably. I went to bake a, what was I baking? I was baking a cake, actually, and I decided I was going to do it from scratch, and I went to get the ingredients, and it called for, it was a pie, that's what it was. It called for a can, and it said a 16-ounce can of whatever it was, I can't remember. But anyhow, I went and I looked at the can, and the can was 12 ounces. And this is what is happening to our food. So we may not feel that the price of tuna fish, for example, is $1.39. But the size of the can went from 8 ounces to 5 ounces. That's a huge setback. It's only the beginning of what we're going to be facing. We're at the start of this. So we have a chance to come out of it if we're smart and if we plan. We have a chance to do nothing if we continue to follow what our government and what our United Nations and the authorities around the world that have lied and said they have lied over and over again. And they even talk about lying. And I noticed in the last report, they did not use any definitive words. Everything was may, could, might, should, probably. All of those words were in the report. I didn't see anything that said will, must, has, happened, is happening. Nothing that was definitive. Everything was these wishy-washy words that to me was, you could be reading a fiction work rather than a scientific report.
We have a caller who would like to join the discussion.
Oh, how wonderful.
Okay, last four digits are 5724. Caller, you're on the air. Can we get your name, please?
You don't want my name.
Sure.
Come
we
on.
Do. Sure we do. Sounds like Miss Diane.
I just wanted to throw in here, talking about food storage, because we've been doing food storage for a couple of years. Something that I've noticed, you know, there's lists that have been coming out about these foods that are coming from overseas. And what they've been doing on the labels is if it's actually grown in the United States, it states that. But if it's only packaged here, it is packaged here. And up until this year, it stated it was grown and then packaged here. And I'm real freaky about my tuna fish and my salmon. And I've noticed when I went to the grocery store, because I've got salmon and tuna both from both sets of them, and I went into the grocery store and not one of those labels had any mention of what foreign country they are now coming from. I think they've changed, and it seems like in the back of my mind, I remember some legislation where they changed the law that they didn't have to put that on the labels anymore. And we've got a lot, so much stuff that's coming from overseas anymore. I'm with you, Karen. If you have any ability to grow your own food or to buy the freeze-dried, by all means do it, because even if by some freak thing this didn't happen with the cold thing, which I think everybody on this call believes it will, but if it didn't, you still can always eat it. It's not like you're going to waste your money. I just encourage people to just really pay attention where their food's coming from, because it's just some of it is just really gross. That's it.
And you're absolutely right. All one has to do is go take a look and just go on and YouTube. And YouTube whatever food it is that you're looking at, and just put the origin of, just list the food, and you will find out exactly where it's coming from, exactly who's producing it, and exactly what's in it. And that, if
yep.
that does not prompt you to buy, to go out and create a victory garden, nothing will.
Yeah,
Karen, this is John Casey. I want to let you know my time is up, but thank you for allowing me to come on and talk to you about the next cold climate.
Well, John, we appreciate it. We appreciate you. We appreciate all of your hard work. Please tell everyone where they can find you and how to get a hold of your report.
Again, thank you. That's just go to the website, www.spaceandscience.net. The word and is spelled out, spaceandscience.net. And you can go to the publications page and download the Global Climate Status Report there.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the work that you're doing. And, folks, John is not paid by the government. John and his group are not paid by government grants. Therefore, your donations are, of course, welcome, but understand that there is no government motivation pulling anyone's strings in John's organization. This is a group of scientists who are telling the truth, and that is the most important thing.
Thank you, Karen. Take care.
Thank you, John. Thank you for everything.
Bye, John.
Well, Miss Diane, it has been a long time, and it is always wonderful to hear from you. And,
well, this is one of these rare Tuesdays or Thursdays that I actually got back home before 8 o'clock, so I'm just kind of embedded around here. But, yeah, it was good to hear you guys. It was kind of like old home week together, especially with John on there.
I know, and I love having John on because he explains everything in a way that we can really understand it, and it is so important. The most important thing that I always get from John's research is that if we go back and we look in history, and we go back and we look at what happened, and as John said, it's about 200 years ago, 206 years ago in that vicinity, and we have these events, and they last for 40 to 60 years. But then take a look at what happened to the world when these events happened, and you will find that during these events, we've had wars, massive destruction of people, massive loss of life, because people are looking for someone to blame. And the last time we had an event like this was around World War II. And it was not as disastrous, but again, it was a bad weather event.
Yep, it was. It was terrible. And, you know, and by the way, hi, Sally and Neil. I was just thinking about this the other day because I always love hearing John, too, and I was just absolutely tickled to death that he showed up at that school, state school board meeting, not that they listened to him, Chartrand and those smirky looks he gives everybody. I'd like to slap him right across the face. But anyway, you know, the powers to be that are doing this, the thing that infuriates me is they think they are so clad into this that they have their tunnels and their worlds that are built underground so they can just go run and they'll be protected, and they have these special environments down there and they'll be able to be sustained. And my God, that one out there in Colorado can get, what, 3 or 4 semi-trucks side-by-side through it?
Yep.
They have their own ecological system set up. They have all, I mean, for me, and I hope the NSA is listening, a firing squad would be too good for them.
I agree. I really
this
do.
This is deliberate murder in so many different things that it's just, it's hard to get a grasp on it sometimes. And by the way, Sally, did you apply for that job?
I did send in my resume, but I haven't heard back yet.
Well, it's a little quick. You know, it's a little quick depending on how many people they got to call in there send in
Sally,
a thing. But I thought...
Tell everybody what job we were talking about this before. Tell everybody. This is really great.
Yeah, I received an inquiry or reference, whatever you want to call it, referral for a position as a toll systems analyst. So I thought, you know, if anybody's qualified to work on toll road systems, I thought that would be me.
Yes.
I agree.
I can't wait till I get the chance to put that decimal in the wrong spot, so instead of it being a dollar, it's only 1 cent.
Well, you know, I thought about you when I came across that bill that Karen was talking about a little bit ago, the one that they passed last year and snuck through on top of everybody on the public-private partnerships, because what really got me when I read it was that they actually name the Orange County Expressway System in that. As part of their creation, they never used the word regionalism. They stayed away from that. But who do they think is stupid? I mean, I don't know what we're going to do about these crooks. But
well,
even the polls aren't working.
You know, when it comes to this Expressway Authority, and there was another bill, there's been several different bills with Expressway Authority stuff on them this time. I've been listening to them on the Florida Channel thing, and there was actually one that was trying to tighten up, but of course, you know, that person was getting all sorts of flack on, you know, anything that would put controls on who can be on these boards and things like that. But I have every intention, and I'm not sure how well it's going to work, but I'm really trying to round the troops right now, so anybody interested needs to let me know. I know I'm not going to get anything done in April, but beginning of May, I really do want to pursue the common law grand jury approach to what these expressway authorities are, because these are quasi-governmental agencies, and I really do think we have to start going after the fact that we have unelected people making public decisions. They are not elected to represent us. This is a job for those
right.
that are elected, and so I want to see what we can do with the common law grand jury approach to investigating them and showing the corruption. It's not, we all know they're corrupt, but we haven't been really given, we've had the, up till now, at least in my own case, I didn't know enough about the common law grand jury. But I think now I know enough where we can start doing our own investigation and go after them.
Did you speaking of that, I know it was probably 3 weeks ago now, I'm losing track of time, New York State was ready to go to the Florida Supreme Court or the New York Supreme Court with their common law thing. Did you ever hear? I need to get into their website and see what
yes.
their status is.
Yes, they are
what
indicting.
Happened?
Yes, they are going forward, and they are indicting, or they're going to be hearing cases with regard to their Supreme Court. Before we go any further, let's just identify what this is. This is a common law grand jury, and a common law grand jury is considered the fourth arm of government. It is the people's court, which is why it's called common. America is based on common law, that is common, all people being created equal, following the rule of common law and rights granted by God, our Creator, not civil law with rights granted by the government. And the website to go look at for further information is nationallibertyalliance.org, and that's one word, nationallibertyalliance.org. There is a wealth of information there. It is, agree more, ladies, with both of you. It is, to me, the way to pursue the criminality of the people who are our, quote, elected and non-elected officials. And Sally, you're right. Land is not the only issue that falls under regionalism. Everything falls under regionalism. It doesn't matter anymore because that's the way they intend to take over our government. That's the way they intend to take over the people. A regional council is an unelected bureaucratic organization that feels that they have power granted to them to make statutes, regulations, and rules, none of which are constitutional nor have to be followed by the people. The problem is the dumbed-down education leads the people to believe that these statutes and rules and regulations are law and must be followed. And as we learned last week from Roger, statutes, rules, and regulations are not laws and do not have to be followed. They are merely recommendations to follow a law. A rule and a regulation comes after a law is in place. And it's really to tell the people how to follow this law. These statutes, rules, and regulations that come in from these unelected bureaucrats have no teeth, have no way to be enforced unless we the people believe that they are law and should be enforced. And
well, that's how they got away with that in the first place.
That's right.
Right.
And then we go back.
Exactly.
I want to get together that team, anybody who's totally fed up with transportation corruption in the state of Florida, which, of course, ties into the land grab stuff, too. I mean, they're all so related, it's not funny, that I really do want to get a team together who really want to go after the expressway authorities specifically, but all of transportation. It's so corrupt. It's no wonder why we're stuck in traffic. And, of course,
well,
now we've got scam rail out there. And I'll go after scam rail as well.
Well, the sad part about this is that I think Orange County is a perfect example. I mean, the state of Florida is in itself. But Orange County is such an example of Agenda 21 gone crazy. I mean, on one hand, they tell us, you know, we need the trains because we have too many cars, and they want us to take our cars away, but they continue to build more roads and give subsidies to the automobile people. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You keep telling us you're supposed to be pulling us into town, but yet you keep moving us out. Is it a matter of just merely spending money, which is what I think it is when it comes to building more roads, because you're just going to end up, you're not going to let us use them anyway. You're creating this regionalism corridor up through the whole middle of the state and out. And then they talk about fixing I-4. Well, if they do what they should be doing, they wouldn't have any problem, but they don't want to do it the way it should be done. They want to do it the way it costs more money. So now they can get more contracts that more of our legislators will get the contracts, just like they did with SunRail, and they can get rich off of that too.
Yes.
It's no different here than it is in D.C. None.
Well, I was going to ask you, wasn't this the rail that Rick Scott was on record saying that he would never ask for a taxpayer dollar to put this in place when we screamed at him 3 years ago and said don't do it?
Right. And you look at Orange County. Now, if you look at Central Florida, remember, and they're all starting to do it. You have Volusia County. You have Orange County, Seminole, and Osceola. None of them have been hit yet with the increased property taxes of, number one, SunRail. Number two, Common Core. Number three, their regionalism garbage, just like these land grabs, because now we've got to build a soccer stadium. And we still owe for the original arena we had, of which they ended up just tearing down, and we're still paying on that. So now we got to pay on the new arena. This is all in just Central Florida. And Orange County is going to pick up. I wouldn't own land in this state for nothing. Unless I was doing it like you are, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Up there selling
the soccer
it off.
Pardon? They did finally do the soccer stadium is a done deal because there was all that eminent domain fighting going back and forth. So it is a done deal.
Well, the only thing they hadn't done was get the church to build the parking lot. That was the final thing, to build the parking garage. But that's something you need to watch like a hawk, because if they ever sell it, Buddy Dyer's up a crick, because you cannot sell property that you take over through eminent domain.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing in reference to SunRail, just so ScamRail, as I prefer to call it, as I was just told, and this was in the past couple of weeks, the taxpayers are going to pay $4 for every single boarding. So every time somebody steps on that thing, it's going to be $4. Good part is not many people are going to ride it, so that part won't be bad. But I think with the fewer riders, it'll probably be more like $8 a person, because it's going to be a ghost train.
And who's going to subsidize it? You're right. Nobody's going to ride it. I mean, they don't have alternative transportation arrangements made for them. How is somebody supposed to get to work? You got to hop on a bus or a taxi. Now you're talking about somebody coming from Volusia County to Orange County, adding an additional 2.5 hours to their day, just getting back and forth to work. It's insane.
There's absolutely no
Why,
no
Diane, what's wrong with you ladies? You'll have bicycles.
John Micah, scam rail. John Micah, fire John Micah.
I think that we should take away all of the legislators' cars and give them all bicycles. Since they
I want to see John Micah commute on that stupid thing. He'll take a glory ride for his photo op.
Get a pink helmet and a little girly bike like Obama rides, and we could take away all their keys, and I think they should all be riding around on their little bikes back and forth to work. That's the way they want to.
I think they should walk.
Well, that's
I think they should walk.
We should put
even
in
better.
We were on a highway the other day on I-10, and I'm driving on I-10 to the right, and there's a bike path. What idiot puts a bike path on an interstate? But there's a little bike path.
People are
nuts.
Florida.
I could not believe it. But the other thing before we leave, and we have to say goodnight. Oh, my goodness, it's time to say goodnight. I did not realize. Folks, be very wary right now. The Russians have signed a deal with the Chinese, and they will be exchanging oil without using a dollar. This is very serious. And on that note, since I know we've
had... Can I ask a quick question?
Very quick, because we are... 1 minute.
Did anybody ever hear, there was a rumor floating around about the brown shirts out in Nevada having a little bit of a Russian accent. Did anybody ever hear any solid information on that?
No, I did not, but that would be something to look into. And unfortunately, we have to say goodnight. Thank you, Miss Diane, for joining us. It is always a pleasure,
fun.
And hopefully you'll be able to join us more. And thank you, Miss Neal and Sally. And good night, America. This is Karen Schoen, your host from American Freedom Watch Radio. We hope you've enjoyed the evening. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, every Tuesday from 8 to 10, and on Red State Talk Radio every Wednesday at 12 and Sunday at 12 in the evening. Thank you all for joining us.
God bless you. God bless America. And we will see you all again next Tuesday. Good night and have a wonderful week.
Thank you. Good night, ladies.